I decided as long as I was in the lot, I might as well do some food shopping. So I locked the truck and ambled into the store. I got a box of Frosted Flakes, a loaf of nice, mushy white bread, a jar of peanut butter, the good kind that's been hydrogenated and is full of trans fats and sugar, and a jar of non-gourmet olives. I was pushing my cart down the sanitary products aisle when Mrs. Zook spotted me.
"Stephanie Plum," she said. "I can't remember when I last saw you. I see your grandmother all the time, and I hear all about your exploits."
Whatever Grandma said, it's not true.
"And this business about the Slayers, that's especially not true. Everyone's talking about it, how you single-handed put them out of business. It's a shame about the killer."
"Killer?"
"You know, the contract that's out on you. I hear they brought someone in from California. I'm surprised you're out and about like this. You don't even look like you're wearing a bulletproof vest or anything."
Was she serious? "It's all rumor," I said. "None of it's true."
"I understand," Mrs. Zook said. "And I think it's admirable that you're being so brave and so modest. But if it was me, I'd be wearing the vest."
"I don't think the Slayers spend a lot of time in shopping bag."
"You could be right," Mrs. Zook said. "But just in case, I think I'll move on now."
And Mrs. Zook put distance between us. I made an effort not to furtively look over my shoulder while I wheeled my shopping cart to checkout. My phone rang when I got to the truck.
"What's all this noise about a contract killer?"
Connie wanted to know.
"Have you talked to Joe?"
I talked to Joe, but he didn't say anything about a killer.
"Vinny just wrote a bond on a kid from Slayerland, and all the kid could talk about was how you're going down."
I rested my forehead on the steering wheel. This was out of control. "I can't talk now," I told Connie. "I'll call you back." I dialed Morelli, and I did some deep breathing while I waited.
"Yeah?"
Morelli said. "It's me. You know when you asked me if I heard the rumors? Just exactly what rumors were you referring to?"
"Your vow to rid the world of Slayers, rumor. Your vow to identify the Red Devil, rumor. Oh, yeah. And the contract killer, rumor. That's my personal favorite."
"I just heard about the contract killer. Is it true?"
"Dunno. We're checking. Are you still in the shopping bag lot?"
A little alarm went off in my brain. He wouldn't actually try to catch me and lock me up in his house, would he? "I did some grocery shopping, and I'm on my way back to the office," I told him. "Let me know if you hear anything." I disconnected, plunged the key into the ignition, and took off, driving in the opposite direction of the office. This was dandy. Now I had to hide up from the Slayers and from Morelli. I had time to kill before I met Lula for our movie date and capture, so I headed for the mall. When in doubt, shop. I parked at the Macy's entrance and meandered through the shoe department. My credit card was pretty much maxed out, and I didn't see anything worth going to debtor's prison over, so I wandered out of Macy's and hit the Godiva store. I collected all the loose change in the bottom of my bag, and I got 2 pieces of chocolate. If you buy chocolate with loose change, the calories don't count. And anyway, one of the pieces was a raspberry truffle, so it was fruit. And fruit is healthy, right? My cell phone rang while I was eating the second truffle.
"I thought you were going back to the office," Morelli said.
"Changed my mind at the last minute."
"Where are you?"
"Point Pleasant. I had some time, so I thought I'd take a walk on the boardwalk. It's such a nice day. A little windy here, though."
"Sounds like there are a lot of people there."
"I'm in a pavilion."
"Sounds more like a shopping center."
"And you called why?" I asked.
"They've released your car. I had it detailed, and all the graffiti came off. You can pick it up any time."
"Thanks, that's great. I'll send my dad over for it."
"You can run, but you can't hide, Cupcake," Morelli said. "I'll find you."
"You are such a cop."
"Tell me about it."
I disconnected and left the mall. It was almost 6, so I headed for Lula's house. I ate the rest of the donuts while I sat in traffic on Route 1. Lula was outside, sitting on her stoop, waiting for me.
"You're late," she said. "We're gonna miss the beginning of the movie. I hate that."
"Traffic," I told her. "And anyway, I'm only 5 minutes late. We have lots of time."
"Yeah, but I gotta get popcorn. You can't watch no mutant movie without popcorn. And probably I need soda and some candy to balance out all that salt and grease on the popcorn."
I parked in the multiplex lot and took a last look at the Pancheck file.
Harold Pancheck, I read to Lula. 22 years old, blonde hair, blue eyes, Caucasian. Chunky build, 5'10" tall, no identifying characteristics. This is the guy who took a leak on the rosebush. He's got a low-ticket bond. We're not going to make a lot of money on him, but we need to bring him in anyway.
On account of we're professionals, Lula said.
Yeah, and if we want to keep the job, we haven't got a choice.
I pulled the file photo, and Lula and I studied it.
He reminds me of someone, Lula said. I can't put my finger on it.
SpongeBob SquarePants. Yellow hair, no neck, body by Lego.
That's it. Skin like a sponge.
I slipped the photo and the authorization to capture into my shoulder bag. I also had cuffs, a stun gun, and defense spray in the bag. My gun was in Morelli's cookie jar. Ranger's gun was in the truck. God knows what Lula had in her bag. Could be a loaded rocket launcher. We crossed the lot and entered the theater. We got our tickets, our popcorn, our soda, our M&Ms, Jujubes, Twizzlers, and Junior Mints.
Look there, Lula said. Spongehead is collecting tickets.
The smart thing would be to cuff him now. Any number of things could go wrong if I waited. He could go home sick. He could recognize me and leave. He could decide he hated his job and quit, never to be seen again.
I've been dying to see this movie, Lula said,
her arm wrapped around a tub of popcorn that was big enough to feed a family of 8. We really should cuff him now. If we wait, he could get away.
Are you kidding me? I got my popcorn, I got my soda, I got my Twizzlers. And on top of that, we never been to a movie together. We never do anything together except work. I think this is quality bonding time. And what about that hot mutant? Don't you want to see the mutant?
She had me there. I wanted to see the mutant. I approached Pancheck and handed him my ticket. I looked him in the eye and smiled. He smiled back, blank-faced, and tore my ticket in half. He did the same to Lula. No glimmer of recognition for either of us.
This is going to be a snap, Lula said, taking a seat. On our way out, we'll clap the cuffs on old Harold and trot him off to jail.
After 90 minutes of mutant action, Lula was ready to bag Pancheck.
We could be as good as those mutants, Lula said to me. You know the only difference between us and those mutants? Costumes. They had cool costumes. I'm telling you, you can't go wrong with capes and boots. And you need an insignia. Maybe we should get an insignia, something with a lightning bolt.
Pancheck was in the aisle directing people to the exit. Lula walked past Pancheck, turned, and stood at his back. I was a few steps behind Lula. I smiled at Pancheck.
Harold Pancheck? I asked, like I was some long-lost friend.
Yeah, he said. Do I know you?
Stephanie Plum, I said. I'm a recovery agent for Vincent Plum Bail Bonds. And click, the cuff was on his wrist.
Hey, he said, what the hell do you think you're doing?
You failed to show for a court hearing. I'm afraid I'm going to have to take you in to get rescheduled.
I'm working.
You're leaving an hour early today, I told him.
I gotta tell my boss.
I snapped the second bracelet on him and gave him a nudge toward the door. We'll make sure your boss knows.
No, wait a minute. On second thought, I don't want anyone to know. This is embarrassing. Jeez, is everyone looking?
Not everyone, Lula said. I think there's a guy over by the popcorn counter who's not looking.
It's all a big mistake anyway. I'm not the one who killed a rosebush.
I suppose it was the phantom leaker. Lula said.
It was Griswoldi's dog. He lifts his leg on that bush every day. This is discrimination. I don't see Griswoldi's dog getting hauled into court. Everybody knows he pisses on everything, but it's okay because he's a dog. It's not fair.
I see your point, Lula said. Not that it makes any difference. We're still gonna cart your chunky ass off to jail.
Pancheck dug his heels in.
No way. I'm not going to jail.
You're making a scene, I told him.
Fine, I'll make a scene. I have a cause.
The mutants would never have stood for this, Lula said. Those mutants didn't put up with anything.
I gave Pancheck a yank forward and maneuvered him through the lobby up to the exit door. I was talking to him all the way, trying to get him to cooperate. It's not like you're going to get locked away, I said. We have to bring you to the station to reschedule. That's just the way it's done. We'll get you bonded out again as soon as possible. I held the door open and nudged Pancheck out the door into the lot. Cars were at least 10 rows deep, parked under the glare of the overhead security lights. I was parked 5 rows back. Lula and I led Panchek through 3 rows of cars and stopped. An SUV was idling in the aisle between parked cars. A silver compact was nose-to-nose with the SUV. A black guy in a silky white oversized warm-up suit was standing beside the SUV, talking to a white male dressed head-to-toe in Abercrombie and Fitch. Both men were late teens. From what I could see of the silver car, there was a couple in the back seat and a girl in the passenger side front seat.
"We don't want to be seeing this," Lula said. "Used to be you had to go looking for the dope, and now the dope comes to you."
I called the Hamilton police and told them they had a problem in the multiplex lot. Then I called the theater and told them to send security into the lot. The guy in the silky suit and the kid kept talking. The silky suit was stoic, and the white kid was agitated. The girl in the front passenger seat got out of the car, impatient.
"This isn't good," Lula said. "She should never have got out of the car. These are gang guys. They got a philosophy about women makes Eminem sound like he's writing nursery rhymes."
3 big guys in homie clothes, all wearing red scarves flying from pants pockets, got out of the SUV and did their I'm a big bad gang member shuffle over to the negotiation. One of the big guys jabbed a finger into the Abercrombie and Fitch kid's chest and got into his face. The kid pushed back. The gang guy took out a gun and held it to the kid's head.
"Crap," Lula said on a sigh.
I looked over my shoulder, wondering what was taking security so long. Probably this happened all the time, and no one wanted to come into the lot until the police arrived. The girl's eyes were wide, deer caught in the headlights. The remaining gang members turned on her, walking her backward, trapping her against Ranger's truck. Another gun was drawn. A knife appeared. I pressed the panic button on the truck's remote, and the truck alarm went off. Everyone jumped. The SUV guys piled into their car, backed up, and left the lot, burning rubber. I did a double hit on the panic button, and the alarm went silent. I turned to Lula and realized Panchek was missing. We'd forgotten to keep watch over Panchek. Worse than losing Panchek, he'd taken off wearing a $60 pair of cuffs. Lula was looking around, too.
"Don't you hate when they take off like that?" she said. "If there's one thing I can't stand, it's a sneaky felon."
"He can't have gone far. You take one side of the lot, and I'll take the other, and we'll meet in the theater." There was the sound of a car engine coming to life in the second row. A car was gunned out of its parking space, and the car roared off toward the exit. I caught a glimpse of yellow hair on the guy behind the wheel.
"Guess we don't have to search the lot no more," Lula said. "Bet it's hard to drive with those cuffs on. Think you should have cuffed him behind his back like the book says."
"He didn't seem dangerous. I was trying to be nice to him."
"See where that gets you? Never be nice to people."
I unlocked the truck and climbed in. "Maybe he's dumb enough to go home," I said to Lula. "We'll check out his house." We pulled out of the lot, and I saw 2 Hamilton Township PD cars angled into the curb, lights flashing half a block down. One was a squad car, and the other was unmarked. The SUV was in front of the squad car. The occupants of the SUV were palms down on the SUV hood, getting searched. I eased past the police cars and recognized Gus Chiani. He was standing back, letting the uniforms do their job. Most of the Hamilton cops were strangers to me. I knew Chiani because he was one of Morelli's longtime drinking buddies. I stopped and powered my window down. "What's going on?" I asked Chiani.
"Speeding," he said, smiling. "We were answering your call and ran across this SUV doing 80 in a 20.
"It's the car I called in." His smile widened.
"I figured."
He took a step back and looked at Ranger's truck.
"You steal this?"
"Borrowed."
"Bet Joe's happy about that."
All the cops knew Ranger's truck.
"Gotta go," I said.
If Chiani was here, Morelli wasn't far behind. The guy in the white silk warm-up suit turned his head sideways and stared at me. His face held no expression, but his eyes were like still pools in the River Styx, black and bottomless and terrifying. He gave a slight nod, as if to say he knew who I was. His right hand lifted off the SUV hood, and he made the sign of a gun, thumb up, index finger extended. He mouthed the word, bang at me.
Gianni saw it too. "Be careful," he said to me.
I went out to the highway and drove in the opposite direction to what I would ordinarily take to get to the burg.
"This is bad," Lula said when we were on the highway. "That guy recognized you. He knew who you were. And it wasn't because he saw you in the lot just now, either. None of them saw us in the lot. That guy was no shit evil, and he knew who you were."
I pushed it aside and concentrated on driving. I didn't want the fear to grab hold of me. Careful was good. Scared was counterproductive. I went a couple miles out of my way, but I was able to reach Pancheck's house without running into Morelli. Pancheck's house was dark, and his car wasn't in sight. I slowly drove around several blocks looking for the car. Big zero. He could have stashed the car in a friend's garage, and he could be hiding in his dark house, but I didn't think that was the case. I suspected he'd gone to someone he trusted and was trying to get out of the cuffs. I took Lula home, and then I went back to Ranger's apartment on Haywood Street. I parked the truck on a side street and walked the distance to the underground garage. I looked up at the building. Again, floors 5 and 6 were lit. I remoted myself through the security gate and scurried across the garage to the elevator. Ranger's Turbo and the Porsche Cayenne were still in place. A black Ford Explorer was parked on the side wall, plus a black GMC Sonoma was parked next to the SUV. I stepped into the elevator, remoted myself up to the 7th floor, and held my breath. The elevator doors opened to the austere foyer, and I jumped out. I listened at the door to Ranger's apartment, didn't hear anything, held my breath, and let myself in. Everything seemed just as I'd left it. Very calm, temperature a little on the cool side, dark, like Ranger. I flipped the lights on as I walked through the apartment. I said hello to Rex in the kitchen and set the grocery bags on the counter. I plugged my cell phone in to recharge, and I put the food away. I wondered about floors 5 and 6. For 2 nights now, they'd been lit. A variety of black cars were coming and going in the garage, so I was guessing floors 5 and 6 were offices, although I suppose they could also be apartments. Either way, I needed to be careful where I parked the truck, and careful when I moved about the building. I made a peanut butter and olive sandwich and washed it down with one of Ranger's Coronas. I shuffled off to the bedroom, dropped most of my clothes on the floor, went into the bathroom to brush my teeth and smell Ranger's soap, and then I crawled into bed. It had been a really weird day. Not that I haven't had weird days before. Weird days were getting to feel normal. The disturbing part about this weird day was that there'd been steadily escalating indicators of personal danger. I'd done my best to stay sane, to keep my fear in check, but the fear was actually riding very close to the surface. I'd been involved in some scary situations in the past. This was the first time a contract to kill me had been put into motion. Chapter 8. I opened my eyes and had a moment of panicky confusion. The room was dark and felt unfamiliar. The sheets were smooth and smelled like Ranger. And then it all clicked into focus. Again, I was the one who smelled like Ranger. I'd washed my hands and face before bed, and the scent had lingered. I switched the bedside light on and checked the time. It was almost 8 a.m. My day hadn't even started, and already I was late. It was the bed, I decided. It was the best bed I'd ever slept in. And while I worried about Ranger returning, when I was in the apartment, I felt safe from everything else. Ranger's apartment felt serene and secure. I rolled out of bed and padded into the bathroom. It was Friday. Most people are happy on Friday because their work week ends. I had the sort of job that never ended. Connie worked a half day on Saturday. Vinny worked when he didn't have anything better to do. We weren't sure when Lula worked, and I worked all the time. Okay, so it wasn't always 9 to 5 working, but it was always looking. Opportunities for capture popped up where you least expected, at supermarkets, airports, shopping malls, and movie theaters. And while on the subject of movie theaters, if I was a better bounty hunter, I could probably take weekends off. When you botch a capture like I did last night, you have to work twice as hard to make repairs. Panchek knew what I looked like now, and he knew I was after him. I'd had plenty of opportunity to buy shower gel yesterday, but I'd conveniently forgotten. So now I had to once again use Ranger's shower gel. What a hardship, eh? And then I had to dry off with one of his thick, super-absorbent towels. Another hardship I forced myself to endure. All right, I admit it. I was liking Ranger's lifestyle. And even more difficult to admit, I was liking the stolen intimacy. I was going to have to say a lot of Hail Marys for that one. And I was going to pay a price when Ranger returned. Even if I was long gone by the time he walked through his front door, even if I washed and ironed his sheets and replaced his shower gel, Ranger would know his home had been violated. The guy was a security expert. Probably there were cameras everywhere. Not in his apartment, I was guessing. But chances were good that there were cameras in the garage, the elevator, and his outer foyer. No one had come up to bust me, so I had to assume that either the cameras weren't monitored, or else Ranger had been contacted and was allowing me to stay. I got dressed in sneakers and jeans and a stretchy white scoop-neck t-shirt. I swiped some mascara on my lashes, and I headed for the kitchen. I dropped a handful of frosted flakes into Rex's food dish, and I poured out a bowl for myself. I was late, so I didn't take time to make coffee. I needed to stop at the office first thing. I'd get coffee there. I unplugged my phone, grabbed my short denim jacket and shoulder bag, and locked up behind myself. I took the elevator to the garage, suffering through the moment of fear when the elevator doors parted and I was exposed. Even if I'd been discovered on camera, I wanted to delay confrontation as long as possible. No sense pushing the issue and jeopardizing my tenancy. I needed a place to stay, and I was already in trouble with Ranger. Might as well get the most out of it, right? I looked out and saw no one. I stepped out, the doors closed behind me, and I heard voices in the stairwell. Ranger's two cars were directly in front of me. There were three black SUVs to my right, and there was a blue Subaru SUV and a silver Audi sedan to my left. I made an instinctive choice and jumped behind the Subaru, crouching low, hoping I was out of sight. I didn't know who had access to the garage, but I figured Ranger's men would belong to the black SUVs. The door to the stairwell opened, and Tank and two other men came out. All three got into one of the black SUVs and left the garage. I waited a couple beats before I scuttled across the floor, remoted the gate open, and made my escape. The bonds office was on Hamilton in the middle of the block. A one-lane alley ran behind the office, servicing a rear entrance and parking for two cars. I parked Ranger's truck on a side street, and I entered the office through the back door, just in case Morelli was on the prowl. I was in a mood to avoid the unpleasant.
"Uh-oh," Lula said when she saw me. "It's never good when you gotta sneak in through the back."
I went straight for the coffee pot. "I'm being careful."
"I can appreciate that," Lula said. "What's the plan for the day?"
"I need a different car. I can't blend in when I drive Ranger's truck." To be more specific, I can't blend in when I park the truck for the night. Ranger's men were constantly traveling the streets around the back garage. I didn't want to take a chance on one of them spotting the truck. "I was hoping you could follow me to my parents' house. I'm going to leave the truck in their garage, and then we can go car shopping."
"Car shopping. I love car shopping."
I added creamer and sipped some coffee. "You're not going to love this kind of car shopping. I have no money. I'm looking for a wreck." I turned to Connie. "And while we're on the subject of no money, as I'm sure you already know, Panchek ran off with my only cuffs."
"Lula told me, take a pair from the S&M box in the back when you leave."
There used to be a thriving sex shop on Carmen Street. Rumor had it they were the biggest supplier of dildos, whips, and body chains for the tri-state area. 9 months ago, the owner decided he was tired of paying his insurance premium to the mob and told his collection agent to take a hike. Shortly after that, the store mysteriously burned to the ground. An entire crate of cuffs came out of the fire almost completely unscathed, and Vinny bought the crate on the cheap.
"How come you're going to leave the truck at your parents' house?" Lula wanted to know. "Why don't you just give it back?"
I thought I'd keep it a while longer, just in case. You never know when you might need a truck. And I can't get into Ranger's apartment if I hand the keys back to Tank.
A couple new skips came in this morning, Connie said. I'll get the paperwork together later today, and you can pick the files up tomorrow.
I suppose after you get your new car, you're going to want to go looking for Harold Panchik,
Lula said.
I suppose I am. And I suppose I should go with you since he's so slippery.
I looked at the stack of files on the filing cabinet. At least a month's worth.
What about the filing? I can do the filing any old time. It's not like filing's a matter of life or death. I got good priorities. I take our friendship seriously. When you're going out on these dangerous manhunts, I feel an obligation to ride along and protect your skinny ass. Just 'cause a man looks like SpongeBob doesn't mean he can't turn violent.
You're pathetic, Connie said to Lula. You'll do anything to get out of filing.
Not anything, Lula said.
10 minutes later, I had Ranger's truck safely tucked away in my parents' garage. My dad had retrieved Uncle Sandor's Buick from the police, and the Buick and Ranger's truck were now locked up together.
What a nice surprise, Grandma said when she saw me at the kitchen door.
I can't stay, I told Grandma and my mother. I just wanted to tell you I'm leaving Ranger's truck in the garage.
What about our car? My mother wanted to know. Where's your father going to park the LeSabre?
You never use the garage. The LeSabre is always parked in the driveway. Look outside. Where is the LeSabre? In the driveway. I had to drive around it to get to the garage. My mother was cutting vegetables for soup. She stopped cutting and looked over at me wide-eyed.
Holy Mother! There's something wrong, isn't there? You're in trouble again.
Did you steal the truck? Grandma asked hopefully.
I'm not in trouble, and there's nothing wrong. I told Ranger I'd take care of his truck while he's out of town. I was going to use it, but I've changed my mind. It's too big.
My mother didn't really want to know the truth, I told myself. The truth wasn't good. It is big, Grandma said. And you know what they say about the size of a man's truck.
I'm off, I said. Lula's waiting for me. Grandma trotted after me. She stopped at the front door and waved at Lula.
What are you girls doing? Grandma asked. Are you chasing down a killer?
Sorry, I said. No killers today. I'm going car shopping. I need something to tide me over until I get the insurance check from the escape.
I'd love to go car shopping, Grandma said. Wait a minute while I tell your mother and get my purse.
No, I said. But she was already running around the house gathering her things.
Hey, Lula yelled from the curb. What's the holdup?
Grandma's coming with us.
The Three Musketeers ride again, Lula said.
Grandma bustled out of the house and climbed into the Firebird's back seat.
What have you got? Grandma asked Lula. You got 50 cent? You got M&M?
Lula slid M&M into the slot, punched up the sound system, and we motored off like distant thunder.
I've been thinking about your car problem, Lula said, and I know a guy who's got cars to sell. He don't ask a whole lot either.
I don't know, I said. If you buy a used car at a lot, you usually get a guarantee.
How much do you want to spend? Lula asked.
A couple hundred. Lula slanted a look at me.
And you want a guarantee for that kind of money?
She was right. A guarantee was unrealistic. In fact, it was unrealistic to think I could find a car that actually ran for that kind of money. Lula hauled out her cell phone, scrolled through the phone book, and dialed a number.
I have a friend who needs a car, she said when the phone connected.
Uh-huh, she said. She turned to me.
Do you need a registration?
Yes.
Yeah, Lula said into the phone. She'd like one of those. Isn't this fun? Grandma Mazur said from the back seat. I can't wait to see your new car.
Lula disconnected, turned out of the burg, and headed across town. When we got to Stark Street, Lula hit the automatic door locks.
Don't worry, Lula said. I'm just locking the doors for good measure. We aren't going into the bad part of town. Well, okay, maybe it's a bad part of town, but it's not the worst part of town. We're not going into gangland. This here's a part of town where the unorganized criminals live.
Grandma had her nose pressed to the glass.
I've never seen anything like this, she said. Everything's got writing on it, and there's a building that's been all burned out, and now it's boarded up. Are we still in Trenton? Does the mayor know about this? How about Joe Juniac? Now that he's a congressman, he should be looking into these things. I used to work on this street when I was a hoe,
Lula said.
No kidding, Grandma said. Isn't that something? Are there any working ladies out now? I sure would like to see one.
We kept a lookout for working ladies, but none turned up.
Slow time of the day, Lula said.
Lula made a right onto Fisher, went one block, and parked in front of a narrow two-story house that looked like it was decaying from the bottom up. Clearly it had once been part of a row of attached houses, but the houses on either side had disappeared, and only their connecting walls remained. The lots had been mostly cleared of debris, but the landscaping was war zone. An occasional piece of pipe remained, mixed into smatterings of crushed rubble that hadn't made the last truck out. A 9-foot-high razor wire fence had been erected around each of the lots. Refrigerators, washing machines, gas grills, lawn furniture, and a couple ATVs, all with varying degrees of rust, were displayed in the one lot. The second lot was filled with cars.
These lots are owned by a guy named Hogg, Lula said. Besides the lots, he's got a garage on the next block. He buys junker cars at auction, fixes them up enough to get them running, and then sells them to dummies like us. Sometimes he gets cars from other sources, but we don't want to talk about that.
Those would be the cars without registration, I asked.
Hogg can get a registration for any car you want, Lula said. It's just you got to pay extra for it.
Grandma was out of the Firebird.
Those lawn chairs with the yellow cushions look pretty nice, she said. I might have to take a look at them.
I jumped out after her and grabbed her by the purse strap. Don't leave my side. Don't wander off. Don't talk to anyone. A large guy with skin the color of hot chocolate and a body like a cement truck strolled over to us.
Lula, tell me somebody want to buy a car, he said. You'd be happy to know you came to the right place because we got some fine cars here.
We don't want too fine a car, Lula said. We're sort of shopping for a bargain.
How much of a bargain?
$200, and that includes plates and registration.
That don't even cover my overhead. I got expenses. I got middlemen.
Your middlemen are all in jail, Lula said. The only expenses you got is filling your car with gas so you can drive over to the workhouse to pick up your sorry-ass relatives.
Ouch, Hogg said. That's nasty. You're getting me all excited.
Lula gave him a smack on the side of the head.
I love it when you do that, Hogg said.
Do you have a car or what? Lula said. Because we can go down the street to Greasy Louie.
Of course I got a car, Hogg said. Don't I always have a car? Have I ever failed you?
He looked at Grandma and me.
Which of you lovely ladies is buying this car?
Me, I said.
What color you want?
A $200 color. He turned and considered the motley collection of cars huddled together behind the razor wire.
$200 don't get you much of a car. Maybe you'd be better to rent a car from Hogg.
He walked over to a silver Sentra.
I just got this car. It needs some body work, but it's structurally sound.
Needs some body work was a gross understatement. The hood was crumpled and attached to the car with duct tape, and the left rear quarter panel was missing. The thing is, I said to Hogg, I need a car that blends in. People would notice this car. They'd remember that they saw a car with only 3 fenders.
Not in this neighborhood, Hogg said. We got lots of cars look like this. Look at her, Lula said. She looked like she's gonna spend a whole lot of time in this neighborhood.
How about this car? Grandma called out from across the lot. I like this car.
She was standing in front of a purple Lincoln Town Car that was about a block long. It had terminal rust creeping up from the undercarriage, but the hood was attached in the normal fashion, and it had all its fenders.
You could put a whole pack of killers in this car, Grandma said.
I didn't hear that, Hogg said. Don't matter to me who you hang with.
We don't hang with them. We arrest them, Grandma said. My granddaughter's a bounty hunter. This here's Stephanie Plum, she said proudly. She's famous.
Oh, crap.
Hogg said, eyes bugged out.
Are you shitting me? Get out of here. You think I want to die?
He craned his neck, looking beyond us up and down the street.
Not only would the brothers like to get a hold of her, I hear they brought someone special in from the coast.
He scrambled behind a car, putting some distance between the two of us.
Go away. Shoo.
Shoo? Lula said. Did I hear you say shoo?
Some slayer right by here. I'd be a dead man,
Hogg said.
Get her off my lot.
We came here to buy a car, and that's what we're gonna do, Lula said.
Fine, take a car, Hogg said. Take anything, just go away.
We want this pretty purple car,
Grandma said. Hogg gave Grandma another of the bug-eyed looks.
Lady, that's an expensive car. That's a Lincoln Town car. That's no $200 car.
We wouldn't want to cheat you, Lula said, so we'll just wander around a while and see if we like something less expensive.
No, don't do that, Hogg said. Take the friggin' Lincoln. I got the keys in the house. I'll just be a minute.
Don't forget the plates and the registration, Lula said.
5 minutes later, I had a temporary plate taped to my rearview window, Grandma was strapped into the passenger seat, and Lula was a car length ahead of us en route back to the office.
I feel like a movie star in this car, Grandma said. It's like a big limousine. Not everybody can afford a car like this, you know. It must have belonged to somebody special.
A gangster or a pimp, I thought.
And it rides real smooth, Grandma said.
I had to admit the ride was smooth. The car was about the same size as Sally's bus and took two lanes to make a corner, but the ride was smooth. Lula and I parked in front of the bond's office, and we all got out to reorganize.
Now what? Lula said. Are we going after Harold Panchik?
Yeah, Grandma said. Are we going after Harold Panchik?
Lula and I are going after Harold Panchik, I said. I should take you home first.
No way. What if you need an old lady to quiet him down?
My mother would cut me off from pineapple upside down cake for the rest of my life if she knew I took Grandma on a bust. Then again, I'd just driven Grandma down Stark Street, so I was most likely screwed already.
Okay, I said. You can go with us, but you have to stay in the car.
I felt obligated to say this, but it was an empty demand because Grandma never stayed in the car. Grandma was always the first out of the car. I was taking her along because I really didn't think we were going to find Panchik at home. Panchik had been here for a couple years, but hadn't seemed to put down roots. According to Connie's background search, Panchik's relatives and longtime friends were in Newark. I was guessing that after last night, Panchik skipped back to Newark. A gray late-model sedan drove by, hooked a U-turn in the middle of traffic, and parked behind the purple Lincoln. Morelli.
Uh-oh, Lula said to me. You got that look.
What look is that?
The oh-shit look. That's not a look from a woman who got some last night.
It's complicated.
I've been hearing that a lot lately, Lula said.
Morelli got out of the car and walked over, looking like a cop who'd just gotten rear-ended. The anger was tightly controlled, and the gait was deceptively relaxed.
Isn't this a nice coincidence, Grandma said to Morelli. I didn't expect to see you until tomorrow night.
Neither rain nor sleet nor snow nor shoe sale at Macy's could get me out of Saturday dinner with my parents. Like a spawning salmon, I was expected to return to my birthplace. Unlike a salmon, I didn't die, although sometimes I wished I could, and the migration took place weekly.
I need to talk to Stephanie, Morelli said,
with his best effort at a pleasant smile, his hand at my neck, his fingers curled into the back of my shirt to discourage escape.
Gee, we were right in the middle of something, I said. Can it wait?
Afraid not, Morelli said. We need to talk now.
I followed him to his car, and we stood with our backs to Lula and Grandma to keep them from eavesdropping.
Gotcha,
Morelli said. Now what?
Now I take you back to my house and lock you in the bathroom. If you're real nice to me, I'll bring the television in for you.
You're not serious.
About the television? Afraid not. I've only got one, and I'm not lugging it up the stairs.
I gave him one of those looks that said, get real.
There's a contract on you, Morelli said, and I ride by and see you standing here like a duck in a shooting gallery. A dead girlfriend doesn't do me much good.
Well, at least he thought I was still his girlfriend. I was hoping the contract was just rumor.
My sources tell me there's a guy in town from L.A. He goes by the street name Junkman, and it's widely believed he was brought in by the Slayers to take you out. From all reports, this is a very bad guy. Lots of talk about him, virtually no usable information. At this point, we don't even have a description.
How do you know he's real?
The sources are good, and the brothers on the street are scared. Just so you don't feel too special, it appears you aren't the only one on his list. It's said to include a cop and two rival gang members.
Who's the cop?
Someone in gang intelligence. We don't have a name.
I think it's sweet of you to want to lock me in your bathroom, but it doesn't fit into my plans. And last time I was in your house, we had a major disagreement over all this. Morelli ran a fingertip around the scoop neckline of my t-shirt.
First of all, it wasn't much of a disagreement. A disagreement in my family involves restraining orders and bloodshed. Second, I like this little white t-shirt.
He hooked a finger into the neckline and looked inside. Excuse me? I said.
Just checking.
More of the smile. You wouldn't really lock me in your bathroom, would you?
Yep.
That might be considered kidnapping.
Your word against mine.
And it's disgustingly arrogant and macho.
Yeah,
Morelli said.
That's the best part.
I looked back at Grandma and Lula. How do you expect to accomplish this?
I thought I'd drag you into my car and carry you kicking and screaming into my house.
In front of Grandma and Lula?
No,
Morelli said.
I can't do it in front of your grandmother.
The smile faded.
Can we get serious? This isn't just rumor. These guys are out to get you.
What am I supposed to do? I live here. I can't go into hiding for the rest of my life. Morelli's pager buzzed, and he looked at the readout.
I hate this thing,
he said.
You're going to be careful?
Yes.
You're going to get off the street?
Yes. He gave me a fast kiss on the forehead and took off. Grandma and Lula watched Morelli drive away.
I don't usually like cops,
Lula said,
but he's hot.
He's a looker, all right, Grandma said, and he's got a way about him. There's nothing like a man with a gun.
You don't get his way from a gun, Lula said. His way is natural born.
I did some mental knuckle-cracking and sidled up to the big purple Lincoln, hoping it would shield me from potential sniper fire. Morelli had done a good job of rattling my nerves. Stating the obvious to Morelli, that I lived in Trenton and couldn't hide for the rest of my life, wasn't a declaration made from bravery. It was a declaration tinged with desperation and maybe even a little hysteria. I was backed into a corner, the victim of circumstances, and I was at a loss how to fix it. The best I could come up with on short notice was a temporary survival plan. Hide out in Ranger's apartment at night, search for Pancheck by day. The Pancheck search was a good thing, because I suspected after our initial trip to Cantor Street, the search would shift to Newark, far away from the Slayers. Everybody in the car, I said. We're going on a Herald hunt. I docked the Lincoln in front of Pancheck's row house, and we all got out and stood on the stoop while I rang the bell. There was no answer, of course. I rang again. I dialed his number on my cell phone. We could hear the phone ring on the other side of the door. The machine picked up. I left a message. Hi, this is Stephanie Plum, I said. I need to talk to you. I left my cell number and disconnected. I tried Pancheck's next-door neighbor.
He left early this morning, she said. Must have been around 7. I went out to get the paper and he was loading up his car. Usually you take grocery bags into the house, but he was taking them out.
Did he say anything?
No, but that wasn't unusual. He's sort of an odd guy, not real friendly. Lived in there all alone. I never saw anyone else go in. Guess he didn't have a lot of friends.
I left my card with her and asked her to call if Pancheck returned.
Now what? Grandma wanted to know. I'm ready to catch this guy. Where do we go next?
Newark. His family is in Newark.
I don't know if I can go with you, Grandma said. I'm supposed to go to the mall with Midgie Harrell at 1 o'clock.
I took Route 1 to Route 18 and got on the Jersey Turnpike. Grandma was home waiting for Midgie. Sally, Valerie, and my mom were busy planning the wedding. Lula was sailing along with me in the purple Lincoln, riding shotgun, nosing through a big bag of food we bought before leaving Trenton.
What do you want first? She asked. You want a sandwich or a tasty cake?
The sandwich. We had about 40 tasty cakes. We couldn't choose which kind we wanted, so we got a bunch of everything. I have a cousin who works at the Tasty Cake Factory in Philadelphia, and she said they make 439,000 butterscotch crimpets a day. I intended to eat 3 of them when I was done with the sub, and maybe I'd follow them up with a coconut layer cake. It's important to keep your strength up on a manhunt. By the time we got to Newark, Lula and I had almost emptied the food bag. My jeans were feeling unusually tight, and my stomach felt seasick. I suspected the queasy stomach was more fear of death than overeating. Still, it would have been good if I'd stopped after the third tasty cake. Panchek's mother had posted the bond. I had her address, plus the address of Panchek's former apartment. I knew Panchek drove a dark blue Honda Civic, and I had his plate number. It would be nice to find this Civic parked in front of one of the addresses. Lula was reading a map, directing me through Newark.
"Turn left at the next corner," she said. "His mama's house is on the first block, two houses in on the right side."
Chapter 9. Lula and I were in a neighborhood that looked a lot like parts of the Berg. The homes were modest red brick row houses, their front stoops set into sidewalk. Cars were parked on both sides, narrowing the street to barely two lanes. It was early afternoon, and not much was happening. We drove past Panchek's mother's house looking for the Civic. We did a four-block grid, but came up empty. By late afternoon, we talked to Panchek's mother, two former neighbors, his former girlfriend, and his best buddy from high school. No one was giving Panchek up, and we hadn't run across his car.
"We're all out of tasty cakes," Lula said. "It's either time to go home or time to go shopping."
"Time to go home," I said. Panchek's best buddy was married, and I couldn't see the wife putting up with Panchek. The girlfriend thought Panchek should rot in hell. That was a direct quote. His neighbors barely knew him. That left his mother. I had a feeling Mrs. Panchek knew more than she was telling us, but from today's performance, it was obvious she wasn't ready to rat on her son. We'd run down all our leads, and there wasn't anything left to do short of staking out the mother's house. I was all in favor of a job well done, but Panchek wasn't worth a stakeout. A stakeout was a major bummer. Morelli called on my cell phone. He didn't waste time with hello or how are you. Morelli got right to the heart of it.
"Where are you?"
"I'm in Newark looking for a skip."
"I don't suppose you'd consider staying there, maybe getting a room."
"What's up?"
"We have a dead guy here, gunned down on the street and then had his nuts surgically removed."
"Gang member?"
"Big time. Cut. Had a J freshly carved into his forehead."
"Would that be J for a junk man?"
"That would be my guess," Morelli said. "Are you scared yet?"
"I'm always scared."
"Good. I'm drinking Pepto-Bismol by the case. I hate this. Every time my pager goes off, I get an eye twitch, terrified that someone found your body."
"At least we don't have to worry about me getting my nuts surgically removed." There was a moment of silence.
"That's sick," Morelli finally said.
"I was shooting for levity."
"You failed."
And he disconnected. I told Lula about the killing, and we went in search of the turnpike.
"These gang guys are crazy," Lula said. "It's like they're alien invaders or something, like they don't know how to live on planet Earth. Hell, they're not even hot aliens. Not that it would matter, but if they were hot-looking, they'd at least be interesting, you see what I'm saying?"
I wasn't seeing what she was saying. I was taking slow, even breaths, and I was working at controlling my heart rate. I dropped Lula off at the office, and I drove to Ranger's building. I could see someone in the lobby talking to the guard at the desk. A car pulled out of the garage, and the gate slid back into place. Too much activity, I thought. Too early for me to sneak inside. I parked halfway down the block, and I watched the people coming and going. I called Connie, gave her the Haywood Street address, and asked her to check on the building.
"That's Range's building," Connie said.
"You know about it?"
"The Range man offices are there. Ranger moved his business into that building about a year ago."
"I didn't know."
"Well, it's not like it's the Bat Cave," Connie said. "It's an office building."
So what was with the top floor apartment? It was filled with Ranger's clothes. Clearly he lived there at least part-time. I was disappointed, and I was relieved. I was disappointed because I hadn't discovered some big secret place. And I was relieved because maybe I hadn't invaded Ranger's private space. The relief was unwarranted, of course. His clothes were there. His shower gel, his deodorant, his razor was there. It might not be the Bat Cave, but it was Ranger's private space.
"Anything else?" Connie wanted to know.
"Nope," I said. "That was it. See you tomorrow." By 7 o'clock, the building looked just about empty. The 5th and 6th floors were lit, but the lobby door appeared locked, and garage traffic seemed to have stopped. I locked the Lincoln, walked the short distance to the garage, and let myself into Ranger's apartment. I dropped my keys into the dish on the sideboard and went to the kitchen to say hello to Rex. I had a beer and a peanut butter sandwich, and I moved to the den to take another crack at the television. After 10 minutes of pushing buttons on the remote, I had the picture up, but no sound. I went to school with a guy who owned an appliance store. I called him at the store, and he gave me a remote lesson. Hooray! Now I could watch and hear television. Home sweet home. I'd set the alarm on the bedside clock so I could get out earlier in the morning. It was Saturday, but I suspected the security industry didn't slow for weekends, and I didn't want to take a chance on getting kicked out of the one place I felt safe. I borrowed a black hooded sweatshirt from Ranger's closet. The sweatshirt was miles big, but it was the best I could do by way of disguise. I pulled the hood up, rode the elevator down, and I reached the Lincoln without a problem. Connie wouldn't be in the office for a couple hours, so I crossed the river into Pennsylvania and headed for Yardley. Yardley was just a short distance from Trenton, but it was light years from Slayerland. Junkman would not be patrolling Yardley looking for Stephanie Plum. I parked in a public lot, locked my doors, and powered my seat back. It was 7:30 a.m., and Yardley was sleeping in. I called Morelli at 9 o'clock. "What are you doing?" I asked.
"Bob and I are at the car wash. Then we're going to Petco to get some dog food. It's a pretty exciting morning."
"I can hear that. Anything new going on?"
"Nothing you want to know about. I hope you're someplace far away."
"Far enough. I'll be on my cell phone if you have breaking news. And don't forget, my mother's expecting us to show up for dinner tonight."
"You're going to have to pay up, Cupcake. I don't do dinner without reimbursement."
"I'll run a tab for you." And I disconnected. Truth is, I missed Morelli. He was sexy and smart, and his house felt homey. His house didn't have the aphrodisiac shower gel, but it had Bob. I really missed Bob.
Go figure that one. Okay, so I had to carry his poop in a plastic bag back to the house. It didn't seem like such a big deal anymore.
I left the lot and cruised through town. I turned onto Hamilton, drove past the office, and parked on a side street. Then I entered the office through the back door. Connie looked up from her computer when I walked in.
"Using the back door again?"
"I'm trying to decrease my visibility."
"Good call."
Vinny rarely came in on a Saturday, and Lula was always late. I poured myself a cup of coffee and took a seat across from Connie. "Any new shootings, firebombings, rumors of my imminent death?"
"Nothing new."
Connie slid the mouse across the mouse pad and clicked.
"I've got 3 new skips. I'm printing out the search results for you now. The original paperwork is somewhere in the mess of unfiled documents stacked on the cabinets."
Oh, boy. Lula hadn't filed anything in so long, there were more files on top of the cabinets than there were in the drawers.
"We have to go through those stacks," Connie said, coming out of her chair. "And we might as well file them while we search. We're looking for Anton Ward, Shoshana Brown, and Jamil Rodriguez."
An hour later, we had the documentation for all 3 skips, and we'd filed more than half of the outstanding cases. The front door crashed open, and Lula marched in.
"What's going on here?" she asked. "I miss anything?"
Connie and I gave Lula a cold, 10-second stare.
"Yeah?"
Lula asked.
"We just spent an hour doing your filing so we could find the paperwork on 3 new skips," Connie said.
"You didn't have to do that," Lula said. "I got a system."
"You weren't here," Connie said. "Where the hell were you? You were supposed to be here at 9.
"I'm never here at 9 on Saturdays. I'm always late on Saturdays. Everybody knows that."
Lula poured herself a cup of coffee.
"Did you hear the news?" "I was listening to the radio on the way in, and they said the Red Devil robbed the deli mart on Commerce Street this morning, and he shot the clerk 10 times in the head. That's a lot of times to get shot in the head."
The Red Devil again, getting more bold, more ruthless. It seemed like years had passed since my escape got fried and Eddie got shot. I dropped into my seat at the desk and added Connie's search information to the 3 files. Shoshana Brown was wanted for possession. She was a repeater. I picked Shoshana up for Pryor's, and I knew she wouldn't be hard to find. Probably she didn't have a ride to court. Jamil Rodriguez was caught shoplifting a variety of electronics from Circuit City. When they searched him, they found a loaded Glock, a box cutter, a sandwich bag filled with ecstasy, and a human thumb in a sealed vial of formaldehyde. He claimed to have no knowledge of the thumb. Anton Ward had a high bond. He'd gotten into a fight with his girlfriend and had stabbed her repeatedly with a steak knife. The girlfriend had lived, but she wasn't happy with Anton. Anton had made bail but had failed to show for court. He was 19 with no priors, or at least no priors as an adult. Vinny had a notation on Ward's bond document that there were gang tattoos on Ward's arm. One of the tattoos was a paw print accompanied by the letters CSS. Ward was a Comstock Street slayer. I paged through the file looking for the photo. The first photo was a profile. The second was full on. I saw the second photo and froze. Anton Ward was the Red Devil.
"You don't look too good," Lula said. "Are you okay? You look whiter than usual."
"This is the devil guy." Connie grabbed the file.
"Are you sure?"
"It's been 4 days, but I'm pretty sure that's him."
"I didn't give him to you when I ran the neighborhood check because I couldn't find him," Connie said. "I didn't have time to go through the stacks of unfiled folders."
"Oops," Lula said. Connie looked through the folder and read from the computer search.
"Anton Ward dropped out of high school when he was 16. No work history. Lives with his brother."
She flipped to the bond document.
"His bond was secured by someone named Francine Taylor. She put her house up as collateral. Vinny has a note that the daughter, Laura Lean, is very pregnant, very young, and expecting to marry Anton Ward."
Connie handed the file back to me.
"I hate to give this to you. Ordinarily, this would go to Ranger."
"No problem," I said. "I'm turning it over to the police." Trenton PD didn't have the manpower to pursue every skip. This was fine by me because it meant my job was secure. Anton Ward would be different. He was involved in a cop shooting and a possible murder. Trenton PD would find the manpower to go after Anton Ward. I called Morelli and told him about Ward.
"I don't want you anywhere near this guy," Morelli said.
I felt the muscles knot around my spine. "Morelli's a cop. He's Italian," I told myself. "He can't help himself. Cut him some slack."
"Could you rephrase that?" I asked Morelli. "I think what you meant was, be careful."
"I said exactly what I meant. I don't want you anywhere near Anton Ward."
So here's the unfortunate truth. I called Morelli because I didn't want to go anywhere near Anton Ward. Problem is, when Morelli issues it as a demand, my ears go flat against my head, my eyes narrow, and I take a stance with my head down, ready to lock horns. I don't know why I do this. I think it might have something to do with curly hair and being born in Jersey, and needless to say, this isn't the first time it's happened.
"And I suppose it's okay for you to go after him?" I said to Morelli.
"I'm a cop. We go after criminals. That's why you called me, right?"
"And I'm a fugitive apprehension agent."
"Don't take this the wrong way," Morelli said, "but you're not a great apprehension agent."
"I get the job done."
"You're a magnet for disaster."
"Okay, hotshot," I said. "I'll give you 24 hours to get him, and then he's mine."
I put my phone back into my bag and looked over at Lula.
"Guess you told him," Lula said. "If it was me, I would have given him forever. To begin with, those people all live over in Slayerland. And if you want to think about something else, Anton hasn't got a lot to lose, being that he just made Swiss cheese out of someone's head."
I got carried away.
"No shit. And how are you expecting to find someone Morelli can't find? Morelli's good."
Morelli'd issued his ultimatum before I'd finished giving him all the information. "Morelli doesn't know about Laura Lean Taylor. And, as we all know, the girlfriend is always the ticket to the skip."
"I'm hoping he don't need Laura Lean on account of I don't want to have to follow your ass into Slayerland," Lula said.
I tucked the three new files into my bag.
"Laura Lean doesn't live in Slayerland. She lives on Hancock Street."
"Hey, that's my neighborhood," Lula said.
Lula leaned over me and sniffed.
"Boy, That Ranger truck smell stays with you. You've been out of that truck for a whole day, and you still smell like Ranger.
She took a step back.
There's something different about you. I can't put my finger on it.
She's fat, Connie said.
Lula's face creased into a broad smile.
That's it. Look at those chubby cheeks and that booty. And you got love handles that go all the way around. You go, girl. You're on your way to being a big woman like Lula.
I looked down at myself. They were right. I had a roll of fat hanging over the waistband of my jeans. Where'd that come from? I was almost certain it wasn't there last night. I ran into the bathroom and examined my face in the mirror. Definite chubbiness. Apple cheeks. Two chins. Shit. It was the stress. Stress released a hormone that made you fat, right? I was pretty sure I read that somewhere. I checked out my jeans again. I'd had a stomach ache all morning. Now I knew why. I popped the top snap and felt some relief as more fat oozed out. I went back to Lula and Connie. It's the stress, I said. It's releasing hormones that are making me fat.
Good thing I brought donuts with me, Lula said. Have one of the chocolate-covered cream-filled and you'll feel better. Don't want to let that stress grab hold of you.
Connie let me out the back door and locked up after me. We'd filed the remaining folders and eaten all the donuts. Connie was going to a baby shower at the firehouse this afternoon. Lula had a hair appointment. I was going to spend the day being careful. I slipped out of the alley wearing the hooded sweatshirt with the hood up, and I did a fast scan of the side street. No gang guys in baggy pants and do-rags waiting to gun me down. Good deal. I cruised into the burg, and I parked one street over from my parents' house. I walked head down around the block, cut through the Kruzwicki's yard, and hopped the fence into my parents' backyard. My mother shrieked when she saw me at the back door. "Holy Mother," she said, hand over her heart. "I didn't recognize you at first. What are you doing with the hood up on that sweatshirt? You look like a maniac." "I was chilly." She put her hand to my forehead. "Are you coming down with something? There's a lot of flu going around." "I'm fine." I removed the sweatshirt and hung it over the back of a kitchen chair. "Where is everybody?" "Your father's running errands, and Valerie took the girls shopping. Why?" "Just making conversation." "I thought maybe you were going to make a big announcement."
"What would I announce?"
"It's getting obvious," my mother said. "Okay, so I've moved out of Morelli's house. It's not like it's the end of the world. We haven't even totally broken up this time. We're still talking to each other."
"You moved out, but aren't you pregnant?"
I was stunned. Pregnant? Me? I looked down at my belly. Yikes. I did look pregnant. I was on the pill, but I guess there could have been a slip-up. I did a fast calculation and stifled a sigh of relief. I wasn't pregnant. "I'm not pregnant," I said.
"It's the donuts," Grandma said. "I know a donut butt when I see one."
I looked around for a knife. I was going to kill myself. "I've been under a lot of stress," I said.
"You could get that fat sucked out," Grandma said. "I saw a show on it last night. They showed a doctor sucking a whole load of fat out of some woman right on television. I almost threw up watching it."
The front door crashed open, and Mary Alice galloped in. Valerie followed with the baby. Angie followed Valerie. Angie and Mary Alice immediately went to the television. Valerie brought the baby into the kitchen with her.
"Look who's here," Grandma said to Valerie. "Stephanie came early, and she's not even going to leave right away."
Valerie set the diaper bag on the floor and looked at me wide-eyed.
"Oh, my gosh," she said. "You're pregnant."
"That's what we thought, too," Grandma said. "Turns out she's just fat."
"It's stress," I said. "I need to relax. Maybe I'm drinking too much coffee."
"I'm telling you, it's the donuts," Grandma said. "The plum side of the family finally caught up with you. You don't watch out. You're going to look like your Aunt Stella."
Stella had to have someone else tie her shoes.
"Your pants aren't buttoned,"
Mary Alice said to me as she galloped through.
"Did you know that?"
"Okay, fine. I'll never eat again, not ever. I'll drink water. But wait a minute. Suppose the junk man finds me and I get shot. I could end up on life support, and I could need the extra fat. Maybe the extra fat is a good thing, an act of God.
What have we got for dessert? I asked my mother.
Chocolate cake and vanilla ice cream?
If God had wanted me to lose weight,